depends on how much you got, because I mean, you still have mud season, but now you got mud season and 80s with humidity.
Oh yeah, I mean we get that like lately. The past probably, I don't know, maybe 10 years in Wisconsin, we have like this rainy season in spring where we get all these floods and everything else, and that's like an entire year's worth of precipitation that comes down in a matter of like a week, mm-hmm. and then everywhere is underwater, and then we wind up with like droughts the rest of the year. Yeah. Like it's been fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, after you get to deal with mud for the next 2 weeks, and then you get drought. Yeah.
Yep, pretty much. And it's super weird because it didn't used to be like that. I mean, like the climate is changing very clearly because it's not anything like it was when I was young at all. Because I can remember we would have snow in like mid-October occasionally, and then that would hang around until like April, May, and then we'd get, you know, like a month and a half of spring where it'd be super muddy and things would be melting and whatever, and then we just have a summer. Yeah. Like, and now we don't have spring really. It's rainy mud season summer.
You should start cloud seeding like Dubai did. That totally didn't backfire.
Yeah, the freaking flooding and
all the supercars underwater.
Yeah, that worked out really well, guys.
The supercars, like the Gallardos and the Ferraris, it's just like, why?
There's, I mean, you know, and there's probably like half of the world's F-40s and F-50s are in Dubai, and most of those are probably totaled now.
Yeah.
So now it looks like Ferrari actually made as many as they said they did.
Yeah. Which is more devastating, the Dubai floods or the sinkhole that opened under the Camaro Museum or Corvette Museum?
I really am not a huge fan of Corvettes, so definitely Dubai for me. Like, Corvettes are like, I have friends who have some kick-ass Corvettes. So, like, the guys that I was hanging around with this last Sunday, like, they, at the car show, like, they have the one guy that we always mock him and, like, laugh about, oh, is that a stock Corvette? Because it is an 800 wheel horsepower monstrosity. And
like stock plus.
Yeah, but like if you ignore the wheels, like there's not a whole lot cosmetically done to it. Mm-hmm. So everybody always laughs because he at a car show like year before, he got asked if it was just a stock Camaro with bigger tires, and he just stared at the guy and he's like, are you serious right now? Like, are you kidding me? Like,
oh, I saw the video you shared the other day with the Hennessys and a couple other ones. And there was like an Evo, and then there was like just like, what? What am I watching?
Oh, yeah.
Stop bringing junk to the car show.
Yeah, yeah. And it's and all this cool stuff. And then like this freaking Kia, like, stop bringing Kia Souls to car shows. No one wants to see your pile of shit Kia Soul. No one cares.
Kia Soul and Ford Flexes and
yeah. Oh man, that car show that I went to, that Cars and Coffee. Like, there's keep in mind, like the group that I go with to a lot of these car shows is like a pair of Ferrari 308s. Mm-hmm. There's a McLaren 720S.
Which the wheels on that cost more than the Kia Soul.
Oh, yeah, and he just redid them, too. He just had them repowder-coated because the stock ones are kind of like a matte black, and he wanted gloss black, so he had them repowder-coated. He was telling me...
Ask him if we could borrow $1.7 million to buy that town in Montana.
Well, and the funny thing is he was telling me that... he's like, obviously, I bought this used. He's like, I bought this used. I didn't buy this new. But he's like, but I have the build sheet for it. And he was like, this paint, the gold yellow paint, is a $30,000 option. $30,000 for a paint option.
All my worldly possessions combined don't value $30,000.
The roof, it's the electrochromatic roof. So you hit a button and it goes from clear to opaque black.
Uh-huh.
And that roof is like something like $25,000 or $30,000. The only reasonably priced thing on that entire car for options is it's $6,000 for the yellow color matched seat belts.
Fuck.
It is ridiculous. But like, there's that McLaren, there's a Jaguar F-Type, that's the V8S. There's a Maserati Gran Turismo, my Alfa Romeo, you know, a pair of Audi R8s, one's a V8, one's a V10 plus, some other supercars, a bunch of these like super, super rare Mustangs. Like there's the California edition. There's a couple Mach 1s. There's a couple Shelby GT350s, a couple Shelby GT500s, some other stuff. But, and like a one of like four Corvette in orange, the specific shade of orange. They only made like four of them for the US.
Orange is a terrible color.
It actually looks pretty good. I mean, it's a cool orange, but yeah, like it's got like, you know, the extra high rear wing and stuff. And like, he laughed about how when you look in your rearview mirror, that apparently Chevrolet didn't think about it, 'cause when you look in your rearview mirror, all you can see is the stupid spoiler. So he's like, so you have to use your mirrors and just like accelerate to see if anybody's like alongside you or anything, because you can't actually see. And he's like, what was the point of this? Why did you do this? This is stupid. Like, but like, that's the stuff that rolls around with us. And then we go there and like, it's packed. Yeah. Well, it's packed, right? Like the entire place very quickly after we all get there and all park kind of in a group just fills up. And it's all of these other high-end cars. There's a bunch of like M3s, and there's, you know, there's some GTRs and some other R8s and other stuff. There's a couple RS7s, all this other cool stuff. And as we're sitting there and we're talking about how packed it is, like three like old pickup trucks pull in and start looking for a spot. And I'm like, okay, look around as you pulled in here and you drove all the way around through here to try and find a place. Look at the cars that are here and then consider that your pile of shit square body Chevy that is like one fender bender away from the junkyard probably isn't quite up to snuff here. Maybe you should go, huh?
Oh.
And then there's always that one asshole that's got a
the six cylinder S10, huh?
Oh, it was, I mean, they were nice trucks, but like, it sounded like they were the SSs, right? Like they weren't even the 454s. Yeah. They weren't, there was an Excursion that was lifted so high, I couldn't believe it. Like riding on like 30 inch rims. It was ridiculous. Like, and I asked the guy about, and apparently it was actually like a SEMA build for somebody. So like, I understand that showing up fine. That's a SEMA build. That's probably $100,000 vehicle. Okay, fine. But like, there's always that one asshole who's got to show up in like a bone or like a barely upgraded like Malibu wagon and acts like he's hot shit. And everyone's like, why are you here? Like, what? Why is there? And like, everyone was like constantly people were going, well, why is this person parking here? Like the spectator parking is down there. Like they need to move that back to spectator parking so that we have room up here for the actual show cars. He's like, I am a show car. And no, you're not.
You're not.
No,
you're not.
It's, if I can purchase your vehicle from any random car dealership in the United States and no one will even bat an eye when I drive off the lot with it or anything, you don't have a special car.
Yeah, you just have to look underneath and see if they have cut springs.
Oh yeah, they'll lower. I mean, I think it had like lowering kit rims and like a turbo timer, and I'm like, no, congratulations, you can order from the JEGS catalog. Yay you, that doesn't make your car special.
I bet you money he has a Rock Auto discount.
Probably. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like these guys. And like, there's so many Subarus running around. There's all these STIs.
WRXs?
Come on. Yeah,
go back to Seattle, asshole.
All these WRXs and STIs. And like, I was laughing, and because there's like a whole group of them that apparently have like a club or something. And I was laughing, and I'm like, oh, you're all men. And they're like, what? I was like, oh, I mean, it's a bunch of Subarus. I just expected it was this collection of lesbians. Subaru become the brand of lesbian? Like, I don't know how you do that. I don't think they set Seattle. Out.
Seattle.
Good Lord. Like,
Seattle, Portland. That's all. That's all I'm saying. Seattle, Portland.
Dude, my ex, who's now married to a woman and lives in, like, in Oregon, always wanted an Outback and went on and on about how bad she wanted an Outback. Like, and now I realize, boy, I should have seen that coming.
Very much so.
So PSA, fellas, if your woman really, really wants, like, a Forester or an Impreza or, like, a... Yeah, or a Kia Soul, probably. But, like, if she really wants, like, a Subaru...
She watches that female lumberjack split firewood on TikTok and Instagram all the time.
I mean, I watch that female split.
God.
On TikTok and Instagram all the time.
The only time I wished I was a lesbian. Ugh. Anyway. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another fantastic episode of Anarchy Among Friends Roundtable Discussion. Before we get started, let me remind you that we are covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, which allows for the use and the reuse of this podcast by anyone and everyone except for governments and the bludgies thereof. You can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. We're also covered under Brandenburg v. Ohio 1969, which ruled that the government cannot punish inflammatory speech unless that speech is, quote, directed to inciting or producing imminent lawless action and is likely to incite or produce such action. Therefore, everything said here on Anarchy Among Friends Roundtable Discussion is entirely hypothetical. Did I already say this is episode 241? I think I did.
Yeah, I think you started with that.
I started with that. Okay, well, I bookended it. So there we go. Now we're just moving on. So... where do you want to go? Where do you want to start? You saw the list.
Yeah, I did see the list. I don't know. I have a feeling like every one of these is just going to piss me off. Yeah, so
that's accurate. Let's do an update. Okay. We talked about before, Sandy Martinez, in Florida, Palm Beach. She had some code violations on her house, right? She was fined, and then she tried to fight the fines, and then the fines went up, and then they just accumulated, blah, 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 right? Well, they went to $165,000 in fines for... driveway cracks, a storm-damaged fence, and cars that were parked partially on her lawn.
Yeah, to give them enough room that you could open the doors because her driveway was not wide enough.
Yes, so a cracked driveway, a storm-damaged fence, and a vehicle was parked partially on her own lawn. For this, the accumulation of the fines was $165,000. Palm Beach County Circuit Court Judge Luis Diago granted the city's motion for summary judgment, concluding that the fines were not, quote, grossly disproportionate.
You know, the thing is, too, and as the Institute for Justice with this pointed out, the Florida Constitution specifically prohibits excessive fines.
Yes.
Right. And this judge basically went, I don't care what the Constitution says.
The state constitution, yes.
Yeah, I don't care what the state constitution says. I don't think this is a problem. 106, that's got to be at least half of the value of that property.
Yes. Martinez's debt to the city began accumulating in 2013 when she was cited for cracks in her driveway. This is fucking Florida. Cracks in her driveway. For a single mother with a modest income who was living from one paycheck to another, the cost of land and new driveway was hard to manage. But in the meantime, daily fines of $75 a day continued to accrue, eventually reaching a total of $16,125 with interest – quote, far greater than the cost of an entirely new driveway. In 2015, Martinez was cited for a fence that had been knocked down by a storm. Again, the repairs necessary to bring her into compliance were more expensive than she could immediately afford. While she waited for her insurance company to pay her claim for the fence, daily fines of $125 accumulated, eventually hitting a total of $47,375 with interest. Again, several times the cost of the repair is substantially more than the cost of a completely new fence. Finally, in 2019, she was cited for improperly parking cars on her own property. At the time, she was living with her three children, her mother and her sister. Martinez, her two adult children, and her sister all had cars that they used to travel from home to work and back. Her street has no curbs and is not wide enough to accommodate parked cars. Since Martinez and her relatives could not legally and safely park on the street, the driveway seemed like the only viable option. When all four cars were parked in Martinez's home, two of them sometimes extended beyond the driveway, which is flanked by her lawn and her walkway.
The infuriating part is this next part.
Go ahead.
The infuriating part is, as Martinez's complaint notes, parking on one's own yard front space, even a tiny bit, is illegal in Lantana. The penalty is $250 per day, and fines continue to accrue until a city inspector verifies that the violation has been corrected. Although Martinez says she promptly fixed the parking issue by making sure no car was touching her grass and left a voicemail message with the code enforcement officer requesting a compliance check immediately, no inspector came by, and unbeknownst to her, the fines continued to accumulate for more than a year.
One more paragraph. Finish that other paragraph.
By the time the city deigned to recognize that the parking problem had been corrected, Martinez's complaint says, the total bill was $101,750, nearly four times her annual income. Martinez understandably thinks it's ridiculous that Lantana would charge me over $100,000 for parking on my own grass that I paid for. And keep in mind, it's not just for parking on her own grass that she paid for. She brought it into compliance, and they simply decided not to bother to go out because they're allowed to charge you $250 a day until they check to see whether or not it's been brought into compliance. So if the car moved the same day the initial violation occurred, and it takes 6 months for them to go out and look, you are being charged $250 a day for 6 months simply because the city inspector decided he had better things to do than drive by your house. And this is what that fucking judge said he didn't think was excessive.
Yes. In view of Martinez's financial circumstances, the city eventually offered to let her settle her bill by paying $25,000. But at the time, Greenberg, that's the Institute for Justice lawyer, says that was, quote, over half her annual income. And, quote, that offer was only good for about 3 months. Because, quote, she didn't come up with $25,000 in 3 months, the city again demanded the full amount of $165,250.
And again, remember that $100,000 of that is because the wheels on one side of a few vehicles touched her grass.
No, okay, so because the wheels of the vehicle touched her grass. Because a storm knocked down her fence, and because, I don't know, the driveway got cracked, I don't know, from the tree roots growing in her yard. Like, I mean, it is insane. We covered this before, and it's absolutely insane that she was fined it all in the first place. To occur $165,250 in fines is insane. For this judge to say, oh, that's not excessive, is fucking criminal.
Yeah. This, I mean, can you
Don't say anything. It can be used as conspiracy in a court of law.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if you sent a bill to the city because the city had one of their city worker trucks parked on your yard and you said, oh, sorry, that vehicle was parked 3 days in a row. So now I'm going to have to charge you $100,000.
Yeah.
Like,
what's up, brother?
They'd be like, there's no way we're paying you $100,000. That's absurd. Well, if I did it to my own fucking property, that's apparently what you'd charge me because you just wouldn't bother to come out and verify. We were only there for 3 days. I don't know that. It took me 6 months to double check.
And not only that, but like it makes the assumption, right, that you're still violating the code, right? But then it treats every single day as a new violation. Every single day is a new violation, right? Which is just insane.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous, right? Like, I cannot process the idea that you would find it reasonable to charge someone four times her annual salary and about half of the value of the property for, oh, well, my fence was damaged by a storm.
Which she was waiting for the insurance payment.
Right. And I can't fix it until the insurance pays out. Mm-hmm. Followed by, my driveway's cracked because, you know, it happens. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I'm in Florida. I'm basically living in swampland. The ground isn't particularly solid. Things are going to crack. Like, it's going to happen.
Yeah, tree roots grow.
Like, the entire idea that, like, all of this would happen and a judge would say, well, oh, and then on top of that, $100,000 of that is your car was once in contact with your front lawn.
But we didn't check it for 6 months. Yeah.
Yeah, but we didn't bother to go back and check, and we're just going to charge you, assuming that it wasn't brought into compliance, even though you left us a voicemail and can prove that you did bring it into compliance. We just didn't go check. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that all of that comes together and a judge just goes, nah, that seems reasonable.
Yeah.
What?
$165,250 for three issues like that. And the judge goes, oh, yeah, that's fine.
I can't. I can't even begin to like understand what in your brain says that $165,000 in fines is reasonable for anything.
Yes.
Property related. Like, that's mind blowing. Like, no, what, did he misread it and think it said yen? Like, what?
And this article goes on and on and on a little bit more, but we don't need to go in that much into it. It's just, like, there's the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, right, which is excessive punishment. And then the Florida Constitution has a caveat against excessive punishment, excessive fines. And the judge still went, oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. $165,250. It's fine.
How is that? My God. Like I said, like, if you sent that judge a bill for that, he'd be like, this is absurd. This is patently absurd.
Yes.
But because it's a working class woman, nope, totally okay.
Yes. I just... yeah, it's fine. It's fine. $165,250 is fine.
But, well, and there, and yeah, the Institute for Justice is appealing, and fine, they're appealing. But the reality is, like, how much is that going to do? Because I think the past couple of weeks have demonstrated that just wait for your time in court is meaningless because judges no longer care.
Entire January 6th thing proves that.
Yeah, judges don't care about what the law says. Yeah. Judges don't care what the Constitution says. Don't just wait for your day in court because you'll never get you'll never get a fair day in court.
Mm-hmm. And I know that's a nice segue to another article, but I'm not going to go there yet.
Really? Come on. How do you not put those two together?
Because I have something else. New York State is poised to hand out millions in taxpayer dollars to local media outlets to help pay for journalists' salaries.
Don't worry, they're not state-sponsored propagandists.
The state will dole out $30 million over a three-year period to local media outlets in the form of tax credits, giving publishers the ability to offset up to 50% of the first $50,000 in a journalist's salary. And according to a Tuesday release issued by the New York State Assembly Speaker Carl Hesty, Hesty emphasized that the funds will go towards protecting local news outlets, quote, for many years to come. Here, okay, hold on.
So we've had the conversation.
Hold on. I'm trying to take a deep breath because I have to read this seriously.
Oh, God.
Speaker Hesley. Or Hesty, H-E-A-S-T-I-E, Hesty, said in the release, quote, local journalism plays an essential role in our communities. Not only does it provide critical coverage of local elections, but it also joins communities together through a shared knowledge of high school sports teams, new businesses coming to the area, and issues impacting readers' everyday lives. This funding is necessary first step and ensuring local journalism is protected and supported for many years to come. The credit includes $4 million for the creation of local journalism jobs, while the remaining $26 million can be applied to offsetting the cost of covering salaries. Businesses with 100 or more employees and those with less than 100 are eligible for the funds.
You know, so first of all, we all know, right? Everybody who listens to this show regularly and everything else, we are all well aware that journalists, mass media journalists are propagandists, right? We already know that. COVID proved that beyond a shadow of a doubt.
To quote Orr McIntyre, you think you hate journalists enough, but you really don't.
Right.
Yeah,
it is. You can cyber bully journalists all you want. It is literally always morally correct.
yes, very much so.
But here's the thing: is that was already known, and now they're literally state sponsored.
Yes, absolutely,
in New York. So even if
50% of the first $50,000 of their salary.
So, and think about, like, who's going to be in charge of the allocation of this funds? You think it's going to be an independent organization, or do you think it's still going to be government? It's obviously going to be government, right? Which means that the government is also now deciding where all of this money is going, who gets it, which means that if you say things against the people who are paying your salary, they're no longer going to pay your salary, which means they have now guaranteed that the journalists will continue to be state-sponsored propagandists.
Yes, which is kind of counter to the entire point of a free press.
Yeah, a little bit. You remember when everyone used to say, well, you can't believe RT because it's just Russian sponsored, like state sponsored news, so you shouldn't believe what they have to say?
Remember when Fox News sued for the right to lie and won?
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying, like, you know, like, that's it, always like a running joke. I can remember since I was a kid, that was always a running joke that state paid for journalism no one regarded as real journalism, right? Because you're being paid for by the state. Obviously, you're just gonna say whatever the state wants. That's literally what this is in New York. Like, we call New York the United Soviet Socialist Republic of New York. Mm-hmm. This kind of confirms that is absolutely what it is, and it's not even pretending that it's not.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Are you sufficiently frustrated now?
I'm, yeah, like, I...
How's your heart?
for legal reasons, I am not allowed to say the things that are on my mind.
Because they lead to conspiracy charges.
Yes.
Okay. I got an article. I didn't send you. I didn't post it in the chat either. Sometimes I'll post it in the chat, and then sometimes I won't. This time I did not, because I wanted it to be a first time hearing it. Okay. No one likes a story where a Girl Scout doesn't win a prize for selling cookies, but that's just what nearly happened when a by-the-book municipal code officer in Pinedale, this is Pinedale, Wyoming, slapped a Girl Scout and her mom hundreds of dollars in fines for selling cookies.
And in Wyoming?
In Wyoming.
Oh, that's going to work out well for that code enforcement officer.
Rural Wyoming.
Well, that's really going to work out well.
Emma McCarroll, 13, almost didn't meet her sales goal because the code enforcement officer was an expert on the rules of where a Girl Scout in Pinedale could stand and where her mom could park their car while selling them. The spat between the city and the Girl Scout and her mom began when code enforcement officer asked the mom, Erica Fairbanks, McCarroll, if she had the landowner's permission to sell from the city's Pine Avenue spot and park a vehicle in a driveway there. Puzzled, her mom didn't answer the officer's question because the spot where she was parked was in the driveway of her parents. The officer never made a connection on who owned the driveway and the people using the driveway to sell the Girl Scout cookies. Quote, I personally don't think she ever understood that I was related to the Fairbanks, my parents, who owned the driveway. Nevertheless, the officer snapped photographs of their sales activity between March 13th and March 15th to prove that Emma McCarroll had set up the stand and her mom had parked illegally in the driveway, which straddled the public sidewalk on Pine Avenue. The issue became more problematic because Pine Street, the main thoroughfare through this tiny town of 2,000 plus, is controlled by the Wyoming Department of Transportation, which claims ownership of the property and activity like selling cookies infringes on the YDOT's right of way of the street. So it's one of those super small rural towns of 2,000 where the highway becomes the main street through the town. Right, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Small towns all over are built like this, right? Quote, y'all can't sell within the YDOT right of way, Pinedale Mayor Matt Murdock told the Cowboy State Daily. The mom, quote, was told and she refused to move, said Murdock, that's the mayor, adding that the city was following the rules on code enforcement.
Hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she was fined. Okay, did I mention how much the fine was?
Well, you said hundreds of dollars.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Yes, $400. $400. She was fined.
I mean,
$400 for parking in her parents' driveway or her grandparents' driveway and selling Girl Scout cookies there.
From her grandparents' driveway.
Grandparents' property, yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, see, when you're in a cowboy state, okay, and it's a very rural small town, and you think that you're going to be super cop, all right, and you're going to pick on a Girl Scout. I'm not saying anyone should do this, but I'm saying that it's entirely reasonable that the expectation is somebody is going to look at you and go, is $400 worth your life?
Mm-hmm. To quote PNW Gorilla, are those level 4 plates?
Yeah. Is $400 worth your life? Are you really willing? You're really willing to do this? Because that's right. Like last week or last time we talked about, you know, Bundy and everything. And that was a moment where a bunch of people in a rural community asked the BLM, is the fines for the grazing rights really worth your life?
Yes.
And their answer was no.
This is insane. This is insane, right? I mean, this is, you can't use the Wyandotte right away. Fuck you. It's my grandparents' yard.
Yeah, it's not the right of way. It's their yard.
It's insane, right? And $400 $400 for selling Girl Scout cookies in her grandparents' yard.
And here's the thing, okay, that you have to fully to really understand the insanity of this. So in most states, the Department of Transportation says that the right-of-way extends between, depending on the type of thoroughfare that we're talking about, between 35 and 75 feet either side of the edge of the road, okay? Straight out from the edge of the road. Now, if you are living out on a highway and you have 60 acres of land, that section of land, generally, they want that so that they can mow, whatever. And you probably don't care that much. It's not really that great a percentage of what you own, and your house is probably set far enough back. Not a big deal. This is in town, and you have to remember that the town popped up around a track, right? When this town was built and most of these lots kind of got established, this was a wagon track. And eventually it turned into a back road, and now it's been turned into a state highway. The houses are all still set where they were before, which was not that far off the wagon track, right? There was no reason to build them that far off the wagon track. So essentially what happened is the state decided to change the type of thoroughfare that they were on and then just declared that that front section of their yard, which most likely is half of their front yard, is theirs now.
Yes. Okay. No, this doesn't end, right? This gets worse.
It never ends. It always gets worse.
In a report filed with the city, the officer claims she had instructed Emma and her mom to pack up the cookie boxes and move everything over to the old town hall parking lot, where it would be safer and legal. But the move didn't happen quickly enough, and the code enforcement officer slapped Erica McCarroll with 3 citations. The first was for unlawful obstruction of the road and sidewalk without receiving permission of the Pinedale City Council. The second citation was for, quote, exception, meaning that McCarroll didn't leave 5 feet of unobstructed continuous passage on the sidewalk as allowed by Wyandotte. The third citation was for parking a vehicle on the sidewalk in her parents' driveway. Grand total of the fines, $400. But then came the legal bill. Her mom argued that the fines were unwarranted, especially since her daughter set up the cookies sales operation in the driveway of her parents and her vehicle was parked in the driveway of her parents. She paid $508 to hire a lawyer from Bing PC on South Fremont Street Avenue in Pinedale. 2 of the citations were eventually dismissed, leaving her to pay about $150 fine for, quote, unlawful obstruction. It ended up costing her $658 in legal bills and having to pay a citation for violating the city code.
If the people of that town have any level of integrity at all, that city council is about to no longer be that city council.
Yes. Yes.
It is time to replace every single one of them. Fire that code enforcement officer for misconduct. Little, vote up them and replace them.
Little midnight vigilance committee.
It's time to do a vote of no confidence. Like every town has a charter that will include the ability for citizens to petition votes of no confidence.
yes,
that force people out of office.
I mean, for fucking selling Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, like, are you kidding me? Like, you leave my crack dealer alone, okay? First of all.
Thin mint?
Yeah. Like, she has those delicious peanut butter cookies and Samoas, although they're not called Samoas anymore, but still, she has Tagalongs and Samoas and
no.
don't interfere with that. That is an American institution. That is the kind of shit that made America, and you are attacking it.
Yep. Thin mints and raw cow milk. I'm just saying.
Oh, I think what we need to do is we need to pack up and we need an armed protest in Wyoming in the small town of 2,000 people. We need to get an additional 2,000 armed people to then protest outside of their county seat.
We could invite her to come sell her Girl Scout cookies in our town in Montana.
Exactly.
That we're going to buy when you get the money from your friend.
Yes, by all, yeah, right, like, because Chris will give me that money. You know, the irony of you saying that is, do you know what he does for a living?
Real estate.
Well, that's where he made most of his money to be able to buy the car that he has, but what he actually does for a living is he is a biologist for the federal government.
Mm. So many questions I could ask, but I'm not going to.
Specifically for fishing game, but he's a biologist for the federal government.
Okay. All right, where do you want to go?
Well, we're already on our way straight to hell, so going and why am I in this handbasket?
You want a good laugh?
Yes. By all means.
Just the headline. Internal documents show FBI is worried about white supremacists teaming up with Islamic extremists.
just marinate on it. Just digest
just
that concept for just a minute.
For just
a just minute. A minute.
Yes.
And consider, yes, the noted
buckshot. That's what the headline for MLN says. That is word for word the headline.
Yes, the noted allies of neo-Nazis, Al Qaeda.
Hail Akbar! Hail Akbar!
and then they'll team up with the Black Panthers next, and there'll be no stopping.
Oh man! In September 2022, Gun Owners of America lawyer provided documents to MLN News showing the FBI targeting so-called quote militant violent extremists. We covered that article. MVEs by referencing symbols such as the Betsy Ross flag and the symbol of a Minuteman. The leak led GOA to file a Freedom of Information request for more documents. The FBI initially refused to turn over any documents to the gun rights group, leading GOA to file a lawsuit against the FBI demanding the Bureau turn over the documents. Instead, the court issued an order compelling the government to release the documents. The FBI relented and gave them up. Since we initially broke the story, GOA has furnished MLN News with a new exclusive look at the documents. The documents show that the FBI's targeting of certain groups is not limited to 3%ers and Oath Keepers. The FBI is also targeting other groups. Some threats seem credible, while other threats seem like the government is reaching. MLN will be the first set of documents. The FBI is addressing what it's called, quote, radically or ethically motivated violent extremists and Islamic extremists. This document covers the two ideologies working together for a shared goal. The goal is to bring about the collapse of Western democracies.
You're under the impression that white supremacists want Western democracy to collapse?
Yes.
Are you familiar with white supremacy? Have you ever actually, like, do you know what white supremacy is? Have you ever heard a single thing a white supremacist has ever said?
Oh, okay.
I have to wonder at this point, like, do you actually know what a white supremacist is? Or are you like, are there analysts, quote unquote, the people that are worrying about this in the FBI? Are they possibly getting all of their information from what, you know, like, Google people have to say is white supremacy, and they're basing it off of that? Because I'm very confused how you think that people who literally want to exterminate each other.
The FBI defines RMVEs, that's racially or ethically motivated violent extremists. The FBI defines RMVEs as, quote, those who advocate for the superiority of the white race. The document claims that the Islamic Foreign Terrorist Organizations, FTOs, are likely discouraged from working with the RMVEs due to distrust. But the FBI claims that some RMVEs are sympathetic to Islamists and want to pursue alliances with these groups.
I'm sure some of these extremist groups are sympathetic. We call them Antifa.
There's videos of them all over college campuses right now. Yeah. It seems like the FBI thinks these groups believe in the, quote, enemy of my enemy is my friend strategy. No,
they don't.
No. The FBI states that both RMVEs and FTOs are brought together by their anti-Semitism and their opposition to liberal Western democracy.
There is not enough hatred of Jewish people between those two groups for either one of them to work together. Like, it doesn't matter how much they both hate another group. They hate each other so much that they would it's the dumbest thing I have ever heard in my life. Like, are you kidding? Have you heard white supremacist rhetoric about Muslims?
Have you heard Islamic rhetoric about white people?
Yeah, white, Catholic, and Christian people. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that? Are you unfamiliar with what these two groups say constantly?
Did you learn nothing from the global war on terror?
Like, these people hate each other so much.
Yeah, they have learned nothing from the global war of terror.
Most white supremacist groups won't even accept Hispanic people into their ranks, and they are technically white too.
Most white nationalists I know won't even accept Italians.
Yeah, or Irish. Because we're all Catholics.
Oh, goodness.
Like, are you kidding me? Do you know nothing of these people? Have you ever heard a single thing any of them have ever said? Because I guarantee you that ain't happening, bro.
They're worried about these groups sharing tactical strategies. Suicide terrorism is mentioned in the documents.
Ah, yes, the noted tactic of the Third Reich was, of course, suicide bombings.
Oh.
No. One of those groups, yes. The other one, mm-mm.
No. The other one values white people for being white, and the other one doesn't.
And the other one is perfectly willing to, like, send poor impressionable kids to go blow themselves up in markets for no discernible tactical reason.
Hail Akbar.
Yeah, like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I need a patch.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I need a patch, Dave, that says Hail Akbar now.
Yes. I mean, granted, all right, I'll give you that, like, you know, in the U.S. Armed Forces in the Middle East have over the years encountered a large amount of leftover, Third Reich equipment in like Iraq and things that gets repurposed by, you know, various like Mujahideen types. But they're not really repurposing it because they idolize the big H man. Okay. That's
they're not 420.
Why.
They're not 420.
Yeah. Yeah. They're, you don't have a lot of them running around with a bunch of eights tattooed somewhere on them.
I don't know. How do we translate the 14 words?
I
into Farsi. Into Arabic.
I mean, it's, yeah, like the, this is like they are not going, they're not going to just like coordinate this, especially considering that part of the rhetoric of legitimate actual white supremacists has become in the past few years that there's an invasion trying to destroy Western society and destroy Western culture and destroy Western democracy. So what you're telling me is that you think that the people who have sworn to die to defend Western democracy are going to work with people who have sworn to destroy Western democracy.
All
for the purpose of,
go look at what's happening in Ireland right now. I mean, right now, yeah. Go look at Ireland and tell me that these two groups are going to team up.
Dude, and the crazy thing about Ireland too is like the IRA historically, the IRA and the PLO are very close.
Yeah.
They're very close to each other. And because in their views historically, and I mean, I use IRA very loosely here because the IRA is so factional, I can't even begin to name all of the potential factions and stuff. And that's ignoring IMLA and
those white supremacists.
But the thing is, right? The thing is that what has happened recently is that the factions of the RA who were very close to the PLO are now supporting candidates through like Sinn Féin who are also advocating for uncontrolled immigration and all of these other things, which the rest of the factions are very much against. So you got to remember that the people who are currently being accused of being white supremacists in Ireland, who are not, it's not about white supremacy. It's about, this is our fucking country and we should be able to have our fucking country. It's weird because what's happening is that the people who are being accused of being white supremacists are in fact a lot of times also Republicans, right? Yeah, but yeah. There's an entire other group that still pretends to be Republicans.
They're not even really Republicans or conservatives. They're just anti-left.
Well, you're viewing Republican in the wrong term. You're viewing it in the American term. I'm talking about the Irish one.
Oh, okay.
So
I was looking at my phone.
Yeah. A lot of these people in Ireland who are getting accused right now of being white supremacists, they're Republicans and very vehement Republicans, you know, Ireland for the Irish and everything else. Whereas the people who are, they're largely opposing, unfortunately, are former Republicans. Mm-hmm. Who have completely lost their way. I mean, Sinn Féin has completely lost its balls, completely lost its spine, and forgotten what it was supposed to be. Because, unfortunately, a lot of Sinn Féin in the 70s and 80s got infiltrated by the very hardcore socialist branches of the IRA. So, like, the Provos, the News, and the Trues, those three are all very, very socialist historically. And the issue is, and less so the continuity, but still continuity to a certain extent. So like those groups were historically very socialist, very, very socialist and straight up communist in the case of the Provos, if I'm honest. So like, you know, it's not a real surprise that they went that direction,
yeah,
considering the modern world. But like, I just think it's hilarious that the same people who, you know, just a few years ago in Ireland were getting accused of being white supremacists and getting accused of being these violent radicals and everything else are now the ones going, no, we should just let all of these people who regularly rape and murder and destroy in our country just keep coming in.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yep. I mean, the Sinn Féin recently elected a non-native Irishman to office. right? She's the one I shared the video of. Right. So now, yeah, now we got non-Irish being elected by the Sinn Féin to public office.
By Sinn Féin.
Yes.
Keep telling yourself there's a political solution.
Yes. We have an article about that later. About non-political solutions. But
like this whole thing is just hilarious to me because it's they're concerned about ideology hoppers.
Ideology hoppers, yeah.
Yeah, people that adopt aspects of or switch between FTO-inspired violent extremist and RMVE ideologies. They're not true ideological conversions. They believe that these conversions outnumber actual conversions. The FBI is also worried about these groups sharing tactical strategies. Like,
it makes absolutely no sense to me.
No, it doesn't make any sense. Okay. Like, you're not going to get the guys who have spent the past 23 years screaming that we need to just turn the entire Middle East into glowing green glass to suddenly work with the guys who chant death to America.
The guys with infidel tattooed on their forearm?
Yeah, you're not probably going to get them to work together. I suspect that's probably not going to happen.
I just not say, really. Take a look at Dearborn, Michigan. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry. It's not. It's it's not going to happen. Oh,
yes, the noted hotbed of white supremacy.
Dearborn, Michigan, yeah.
Dearbornistan.
Yeah. Hey, there were no Muslims wrapped up in the kidnapping plot.
What a shock.
What a shocker. Oh, at least they moved on from Boogaloo.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of stopped calling the Boog movement white supremacy. Yeah. And because we kept calling them out. And finally, they were forced to admit that, well, some elements are white supremacists. None of them. None of them have been white supremacist. Not any of them. Like, you're still lying. Like,
they still call it incels. Incels are still white supremacists, even though it's like barely white. But now the racial boogeyman for the FBI is active clubs. They did an episode of Law and Order where they talked about active clubs.
Seriously?
So big time now. Yeah.
God, that propaganda mouthpiece.
Yeah. So
good lord. Like I can figure out who somebody is pretty quick if they're like, oh yeah, I love Law and Order. I'm like, yep, don't want to talk to you anymore.
Nope. If it's Law and Order, then yeah. But if they watch CSI. Don't turn your back on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. FBI agent says he hassles people, quote, every day, all day long over Facebook posts. The FBI spends, quote, every day, all day long interrogating people on their Facebook posts. At least that's what agents told Stillwater, Oklahoma resident, whose name I'm not going to try and pronounce because it would hurt me. It's R-O-L-L-A. A B D E L J A W A D.
It's that is Rala Abdeljawad.
Okay. So Rala, when they showed up at her house to ask her about, she's probably not teaming up with white supremacists either.
We can probably assume.
Yes. To ask about her social media activity, three FBI agents came to her house and said they had been given, quote, screenshots of her post by Facebook. Her lawyer, Hassan Shibley, posted a video of the incident online. Rola told agents that she didn't want to talk and asked to show their badges on camera, which the agents refused. She wrote on Facebook that she later confirmed to local police that the FBI agents were really FBI agents. quote, Facebook gave us a couple of screenshots of your account, the agent in gray shirt says in the video, quote, so we no longer live in a free country and we can't say what we want, she replied. Quote, no, we totally do. That's why we're not here to arrest you or anything, the second agent in a red shirt added. Quote, we do this every day, all day long. It's just an effort to keep everybody safe and make sure nobody has any ill will.
Oh, thank God that you said that, because, see, I was under the impression that infringement definitely included, like, obvious government intimidation by the enforcement wing of a tyrannical regime. But, you know, since you said, oh, well, but at least you're not arresting me, I guess the harassment is, you know, that doesn't fall under.
Shibley, that's the lawyer, said he doesn't know which Facebook post caught the attention's Shibley says that he doesn't know which Facebook post caught the agent's attention and that it was the first time he had heard of Facebook's parent company, Meta. Meta's official policies to hand over Facebook data to U.S. law enforcement in response to a court order, a subpoena, a search warrant, or an emergency situation involving, quote, imminent harm to a child or risk of death or serious physical injury to any person.
I love that he says it's the first time he's heard of them preemptively reporting posts to law enforcement. And we personally know several people whose posts years ago were preemptively reported to law enforcement.
Yep. The company received 73,956 requests from U.S. law enforcement and handed over data 87.84% of the time in the first half of 2023, according to the Meta website. Rollo's Facebook timeline is public, so the FBI agents could have found it themselves. For the past week, that is the week before they showed up, she had made multiple angry posts per day about the war in Gaza, referring to Israel as, quote, Israel, but none of the posts on her feed called for violence. If they had called for violence, they would have deleted her account.
Yeah, immediately. I mean, immediately.
Ironically, she had posted a warning about exactly the kind of government monitoring she was later subjected to. Quote, don't fall for their games. Our community is being watched, and they're just waiting for any reason to round us up.
Oh, that sounds real familiar.
If you're a Muslim and or pro-Pal, that's pro-Palestine, consider all of your media accounts, Google searches, mail, messenger, local mosque, political events monitored. Yeah.
Duh. Oh gosh, the rest of America is finally starting to realize that the moment you oppose what government is trying to do or say, that suddenly you're a target. Weren't they the same people who just like a couple of years ago were calling us conspiracy theorists for pointing that out, that we're all being monitored constantly?
Shibley claims that Rolla knew how to assert her rights from a time volunteering at the Council on American Islamic Relations, where Shibley used to be a state level director. Quote, it's unfortunately normal behavior for the FBI to target the community like this.
And she absolutely has a right to voice her opinion. She absolutely has a right to say what she wants, because we are supposed to be a free country. We're not, of course, but
you just got to say it while you're playing Minecraft. It's fine.
Your Honor, my client clearly said in Minecraft.
Yes. Yeah. Hashtag Snowden tried to tell you.
You know what's funny is that was something we brought up with the TikTok ban thing. Because they care about your privacy. Laughs in Edward Snowden.
Laughs in NSA data center in Washington or in Utah. Oh, what?
It's freaking ridiculous.
And that's the FBI. That's the FBI. Those are the same people that say the white supremacists are going to team up with those people Yes, Andrew. That's
it's.
Are you ready to team up with the people that caused you so much issue in the military?
I don't want to team up with either side of that. I hope both of them lose horrifically. I hate both of them. Like, can we have them both lose? That would be great. Like, if they team up, oh, that's even better because now I don't have to be as careful about who I'm shooting. Like, awesome. Like, it's... I appreciate what the attorney said, you know, where he was like, look, the one mistake that she made is she steps outside her house to talk to the agents. Do not step outside your house to talk to the agents. Don't talk to the agents. Don't say anything to them. Don't record, by all means, the interaction, but refuse to answer any questions. Say, hey, I'm not going to answer any of your questions. I refuse to answer any of your questions. Please leave. And that is all you should be saying. That is the only thing you should be saying, because if you answer any of their questions, they will use that.
Yes.
Because you told them something. So don't acknowledge anything. Don't answer any questions.
What's funny is that they have ruled that not saying anything is admissible also.
Yeah, the fact that you refuse to say anything.
You're fucked either way.
So your Fifth Amendment rights don't exist. Your First Amendment rights clearly don't exist. Your Second Amendment rights don't exist.
Yeah. Second Amendment rights are going out. The Second Amendment rights don't exist. Segway.
Look at that. Especially in the state of New York, your Second Amendment rights don't exist. The United Soviet Socialist People's Republic of New York.
Don't over segue the segue. Since you're angry, you want to read it?
Yes, because this is infuriating in a way that, on the advice of my attorney, I cannot explain much how I feel about this.
There you go, Scott. That's right. That's it right there. In some cases, you have to specify that you are invoking your right to free to. Yes, Scott or Cantankerous Tanker. He's the one we talked about last week. His son Connor got in the accident with the internal injury, walked out like 72 hours later, whatever it was. So, yeah, I guess Connor was cheesed really, really, really big when they heard that on the podcast.
Impressive.
Brandon says you shouldn't have to, meaning you shouldn't have to invoke your rights. That sounds like something a white supremacist that would team up with an Islamic extremist would say.
Yeah, that sounds like something that a guilty party would say. Yeah, that's... You know, the thing is like a few years ago, there was a fan film that came out about Star Wars called Troops, right? And it was a spoof of Cops. It was absolutely freaking hilarious. If you haven't ever seen it, look it up. Absolutely worth the watch. But in it, you know, because, you know, Cops had the all rights, you know, all suspects are guilty until proven innocent in a court of law, right? in Cops.
Or it's right. Cops, yeah. That's for you also.
Yeah, that's supposed to be what it says. Well, if for Troops, it said all suspects are guilty, period. Otherwise, they wouldn't be suspects, would they? And, like, that's supposed to be the evil empire. And back then, in the early 2000s, late 90s, when that came out, that was a joke. Mm-hmm. It's American policy now.
Yes.
It's horrifying.
You shouldn't have been standing near the person. We were trying to drone bomb from 13,000 miles away.
So, all right. So
that's a nice wedding party you have there.
Yeah, it'd be a shame if somebody hit you with a killer flying robot. Controlled from a not even all that secret location just outside of the city of Las Vegas.
Yes.
All right. Remember, no conspiracy charges. No conspiracy charges. No conspiracy charges. Okay.
Remember, don't open the door for them.
A Brooklyn man has been convicted of 13 weapons charges after having been arrested and charged in 2022 for building his own firearms, allegedly. Dexter Taylor's ordeal could become a landmark Second Amendment case in light of the Bruin ruling handed down in the same year. The jury found Taylor guilty of second-degree criminal possession of a loaded weapon, 4 counts of third-degree criminal possession of a weapon, 5 counts of criminal possession of a firearm, second-degree criminal possession of 5 or more firearms, unlawful possession of pistol ammunition, violation of certificate of registration, unlawful possession of pistol ammunition, violation of certificate, prohibition on unfinished frames or receivers, 2 lesser charges, including third-degree criminal possession of 3 or more firearms and third-degree possession of a weapon, were not voted on. Taylor, a 52-year-old New York native and a software engineer, discovered the world of gunsmithing years ago, decided to take it up as a hobby, possibly turn it into a business later. However, when a joint ATF-NYPD task force discovered he was legally buying parts from various companies, they opened an investigation that led to a SWAT raid and an arrest. I just want to reinforce, legally buying.
When a joint ATF NYPD task force discovered he was legally buying parts from various companies, they opened up an investigation.
He is currently being jailed on Rikers Island as he awaits sentencing. Taylor's conviction highlights on the ongoing battle for gun rights. During an interview with Vinu Varghese, Taylor's defense lawyer, he detailed how Taylor's trial proceeded and highlighted distinct bias in favor of the prosecution.
Just wait. There's a quote coming up.
Taylor became fascinated by weapon science during the COVID-19 lockdowns, which inspired him to take up his gunsmithing hobby. He ended up building, I believe it was 8 pistols and five or six rifles, AR style rifles, then 8 or 9 Glock pistols that he built. In an interview prior to his conviction, Taylor told Red State, quote, "I found out that you can actually legally buy a receiver and you can machine that receiver to completion and you buy your parts and
about 80% lowers.
Yep, and you put them together, and you've got a pistol or rifle. Once I saw that, I was hooked. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. This is the most cool thing you could possibly do in your machine shop. From the beginning of Taylor's trial, it was evident that the court would be biased against the defendant, according to Varghese, who explained that 2 judges presided over his case before the current official, Judge Abina Darka, took over.
Totally the kind of person who would team up with white supremacists.
Judge Abina Darka. That is ABENADARKEH. The judge
she's teaming up with white supremacists too.
I mean, very clearly, she's the kind of person that white supremacists would team up with. The judge disrupted Varghese's opening statement multiple times. Okay, his opening statement, which is supposed to be simply the attorney making his opening argument, right? That is not supposed to be interfered with. That is just supposed to be his opening statement, right? Because any interference with that could cause bias in the jury, okay? She interrupted it multiple times as he tried to set the stage for Taylor's defense. Even further, she admonished the defense to refrain from mentioning the Second Amendment during trial. Varghese told Red State, she told us,
quote,
"Do not bring the Second Amendment into this courtroom. It doesn't exist here, so you can't argue the Second Amendment. This is New York," end quote. This is a sitting judge in an American courtroom who, in order to take her seat as a judge, had to swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And of the state of New York.
And she said in court during the opening statement, she interrupted the opening statement of a defense attorney to tell him that the Second Amendment, a constitutionally named right of the defendant, could not be mentioned in her courtroom because it didn't exist there because they were in New York.
It gets worse.
Varghese said that he had filed the appropriate paperwork to, quote, preserve these arguments for appeal, end quote, but that the judge rejected these arguments and she went out of her way to limit me. During the trial, the prosecution attempted to paint Taylor as a dangerous individual who was building dangerous firearms in his basement. In this vein, the prosecution objected to allowing Taylor's family in the courtroom to show support, nor did they allow his upstairs neighbor, who knew about Taylor's hobby, to testify on his behalf. Fergese described the prosecutor's opening statement. He opens up and he says that Mr. Taylor had a parade of horror. He was building this horrible place. When they saw the horror that he was making under the noses of his neighbors because all of those guns intended to hit their targets, basically implying that he was going to do some harm with these things. You know, that the neighbors that he wouldn't allow, that the judge wouldn't allow to testify.
Yes.
When Fergese countered this narrative during his opening statement, the judge interrupted him again. There's no crime here. There's no allegation of violence, Fergese recounted, saying, I got up and said, you're going to learn what Dexter is, who he is. You're going to learn that he never fired these guns. The judge interrupted again and asked the lawyers to come to her chambers for the second time. Fergese explained that he believed the only chance of having the case go in his client's favor was through jury nullification, which occurs when members of a jury believe a defendant violated a law, but decide against prosecuting them because they disagree with the law itself. Okay. Judge Darka attempted to shut this argument down and led the jury to believe they would face consequences if they did not vote to convict Taylor. In reality, this is not the case, of course. Jury nullification is not even remotely illegal and is, in fact, again, an important part of a free society. According to Fergese, I actually argued that jury nullification is allowed because there's some law from the High Court of New York that talks about lawyers who made jury nullification arguments. And basically, they said that judges shouldn't encourage it, but they can't prevent it. I actually made a pitch directly to Judge Darka to allow me to argue jury nullification. She, of course, rejected that. He added, she basically said, you must vote guilty without saying you must vote guilty. He characterized Judge Darka as, quote, the most aggressive prosecutor in the room. More aggressive than the actual prosecutor. Okay.
She literally said, don't bring up the Second Amendment. There is no Second Amendment. This is New York.
Well, she's technically correct. There is no Second Amendment in New York.
The state where Bruin... Okay. I'm sorry.
On April 16th,
I'm literally on the verge of teaming up with the Islamic terrorists right now. Like, I'm literally on the verge.
On April 16th, when it was almost time for the court to close for the day, the jury returned with a verdict. They found Taylor guilty of all but two counts. He's immediately taken into custody. What a surprise when the jury was basically told you have to convict him, you know? The lawyer described what happened after the verdict was read. When the verdict was read, his mom started crying in the back, and he said to me, Vino, please comfort my mother. Fergese continued, saying Taylor also turned around to his mother after the jury was done, said to his mom, God bless you, mom. Taylor is scheduled to be sentenced on May 13th, and it appears Judge Darka will likely make an example out of him to send a message to others who might consider exercising their Second Amendment rights in the state of New York. He could be facing between 10 and 18 years in prison. However, of course, the battle is far from over. Both Taylor and Fergese are committed to fighting this case to the end, even if it means taking it to the Supreme Court. We have a shot at winning in federal court, the attorney said. Taylor's family set up a Give, Send, Go campaign to help with his legal fees. Right. There is an interview that RedState.com did with him.
The Give, Send, Go is at $147,000.
This is a sitting...
A sitting judge
in a court in the United States of America.
This is the definition of legislating from the bench.
Mm-hmm. And after saying that, this judge is still on the bench.
Just saying. Days without autism, zero.
So, a sitting judge in an American courtroom stated, quote, there is no Second Amendment here.
Yes, it doesn't exist here, so you can't argue the Second Amendment. This is New York.
A sitting judge in an American courtroom.
Yes.
Dave, I would argue with that point, but for legal reasons, I'm not going to.
Yes.
But I just, I cannot reinforce it. Like, fully process this. A sitting judge in an American courtroom declared that the Second Amendment did not exist. You were not allowed to argue it. And that jury nullification would be met with consequences.
New York is one of the 13 colonies.
Yep.
So
don't forget,
the guy was evil. He had a Betsy Ross flag hanging up.
Clearly a dangerous white supremacist.
Clearly a dangerous white supremacist. Oh, man. I'm sure he was ready to hand over all those guns that he had never fired to radical Islamists and white supremacists so that they could team up and defend Western democracy.
Defending Western democracy is actually what they want to do. It's the overthrowing it that,
yeah.
But I just,
you know what it is, you notice is he hates seeing women's ankles, right? So he wants to overthrow the Western democracy and have the Islamist and the white supremacists team up so that we have a code that says that women cannot wear slutty clothes and he never has to look at an ankle again.
I honestly can't wrap my head around how no one has moved to disbar this judge. No one has, like, there's not like a massive like call to be like, she should not be on the bench.
The moment she said that, the bailiff should have acted out revolutionary.
The moment that she said that, she should be in custody. Like, mm-hmm. Are you kidding me?
Revolutionarily? Right?
For you to sit on that bench, you had to put your hand on a Bible. And, well, as presumably a Bible, possibly a Quran. I don't know her religious affiliation. But either way, you would have put your hand on some sort of religious document.
She's a radical white supremacist.
And she declared, right, that she was going to defend or to uphold the Constitution to the best of her ability, right? Like, that's a thing that, unless I'm mistaken, somebody correct me if I'm, but I'm pretty sure that that is literally a thing that judges have to do in order to actually, yeah, that they're going to uphold the law and the Constitution of the United States, which is supposed to be the supreme law of the land. And she declared that part of the Bill of Rights just didn't exist.
The following oath or affirmation, I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support the Constitution. That is the New York Constitution, Article 8, Section 1, Oath of Office.
Which means legally she's in violation of her oath of office and should no longer be allowed to ever hold that office again because she violated the oath. That should be it. It should be a done deal. She should just be fired. Hey, congratulations. You can join the millions of homeless in New York now because you're a pile of tyrannical shit. Like, that is what should immediately occur.
Hold on. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of New York, and that I will faithfully and fairly do such acts and make such determinations and reports as may be required by the designation as a judicial hearing.
She blatantly violated her oath of office.
Faithfully and fairly do such acts and make such determinations and reports. Okay. Yeah, that's insane.
And on top of that, right? Like, on top of that, she also then argued or like decided and declared that you couldn't do jury nullification. You know, the thing that became famous during the American Civil War because it was used in order to make sure that people who helped escape slaves to freedom in Canada didn't actually get prosecuted and go to prison for those acts because they were morally correct, like that whole thing. She just decided that, nope, you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
Which means that she's like,
these firearms that he created, right, are from illegally purchased products, right? Yep. Ordered online from legally purchased products, which means somehow they found out that he was ordering legally purchasable items.
You know how they found that out?
The post office.
Oh, no, not even the post office. They found that out from his credit cards, from his bank.
Ooh, yes, that's very possible.
Because they see the names of, they can see the names of all of the merchants who are processing
these payments. Right. The merchant codes, yeah.
And whether they're coded as a regular retailer or not, they know what kinds of things get sold, and they turn that over to the FBI and the ATF.
Yeah,
and
I bet he was using Bank of America.
Probably.
Yep.
Or Chase.
Yeah. So, but yeah, legally purchased products that he never fired.
I mean, technically, we don't even know if they necessarily can fire.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because it hasn't been tested. He didn't ever test it.
And don't forget, by ATF definition, none of the ARs are rifles or firearms.
Well, by legal definition, not the ATF.
By legal definition.
Yeah, ARs that are disassembled are not firearms and have no serialized components, are not supposed to have any serialized components.
So, but that's a good segue into the Supreme Court agreeing to take up the unilateral ghost gun rule. All right. Can the government regulate objects that resemble unfinished firearm parts as if they are guns because without tools and effort, they might be turned or sorry.
With tools and effort.
Yes. Thank you. I'm already ahead of myself. Okay. Can the government regulate objects that resemble unfinished firearm parts as if they were real guns? Because with tools and effort, they might be turned into working components. More specifically, can a federal agency start doing that via a reinterpretation of the law and threaten non-compliant people with prosecution on its own initiative without an act of Congress? The Supreme Court has now agreed to weigh in on these issues after lower courts rejected federal efforts to turn many Americans into felons by reinterpreting established legislation. The Supreme Court's announcement that it will consider arguments came in the form of a brief Monday. So this is recent. In a Monday notice that accepted the case of Garland v. Vanderstoke. So this is out of California.
Yep. Garland v. Vanderstoke, which is an FPC case.
Yes. Yes. Fuck you, no. At issue are so-called, quote, ghost guns, homemade firearms that are often crafted from 80% kits, including unfinished parts, that hobbyists, such as the last man who we just talked about, complete in their own workshops. The ghost designation comes from the absence of factory provided serial numbers, making the DIY guns harder to trace and record.
As intended by the shall not be infringe of the Second Amendment.
You know, like it named in the Second Amendment.
Which apparently doesn't exist in New York.
Yeah. Which according to a sitting judge.
Yes.
Still sitting judge.
The ghost gun designation comes from the absence of factory provided serial numbers, making the DIY guns harder to trace and record. To this day, on its website, the BATFE specifies that, quote, ATF has long held that items such as receiver blanks, castings, or machined bodies in which the fire control cavity area is completely solid and unmachined have not reached the, quote, stage of manufacture which would result in the classification of a firearm according to the GCA. That's referencing the Gun Control Act of 1968. So the ATF says that these are not firearms parts. They are not serialized items. They are not firearms. They are just hunks of polymer or metal.
Well, and don't forget that according to the GCA, if that particular 80% lower is then manufactured into an AR lower, it in fact never becomes a firearm.
Yes.
But they like to ignore that little part.
Yes, which comes from a case, but there was a case in Southern California where a guy was hosting 80% parties, right, where he had some mills and some drill presses and a warehouse, and he had people would come over, and he would help people mill out their own 80% lowers. And the ATF busted him, and he challenged the definition of a firearm, according to the legislation, according to the website, and they dropped the charges.
And it's not the first time or the last time.
Shockingly, they dropped the charges.
They have, in fact, frequently done that, where as soon as you challenge it and say, well, under the law, not your bureaucratic rule,
under the law,
I need you to defend that this is, in fact, a firearm, because we're going to introduce the law and read that in, because it is the law. And they drop it immediately because they know that their rule does not conform to the law.
The law doesn't exist in New York, apparently, either.
It doesn't exist in New York, but...
Oh. But apparently it exists in Southern California, which is also where this this particular case is coming from. Do we really need to go into this further? I mean, they're taking it up, which is fantastic.
Yeah, they're taking it up because most lower courts have sided with FPC in this, and have said, that you can't regulate that. That's protected, especially because there's a previous Supreme Court ruling that said that any law that attempted to regulate homemade firearms would be completely unenforceable. Even if it existed, and if it did exist, would stand a very, very high chance of violating the Second Amendment. That's already an established thing. It's been an established thing since like the 60s. That's existed for a very long time. Now that Garland is being picked up by the Supreme Court, the same Supreme Court that ruled in Bruin, this could potentially set judicial precedent that states you can't regulate those. And if potentially FPC can push the opinion to state things openly enough, it might undo the regulation of receivers altogether by the ATF.
Yes, which would be just. But then they would switch to something else. They would regulate magazines, right? Or ammo. And then we're going to have like an ammo blockade, and we're going to have to wait for that, 4 years to go through to get to SCOTUS. And they're going to find something.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's the thing is like, again, my whole point with like, you can't count on your day in court is like, again, look at what happened in Florida with the fines. Look at what happened in New York with the Second Amendment and jury nullification. Look at these things. Judges have been for some time, I would argue at least the past 20 years, have been very actively activist judges, especially when they're on the left politically. They're supposed to be impartial, but they haven't been. And we all know that judges aren't impartial and have never been. They work for the state. They work for the court system. The prosecutor works for the court system. The bailiffs work for the court system. The police work for the court system. The jailers work for the court system. Everybody works for the state. You can't count on any of that going your way. It's you're going into a casino, and remember that it always favors the house.
Yep. 1 in 5 Americans think violence may solve U.S. divisions. according to a recent poll. One in five U.S. adults believe Americans may have to resort to violence to get their own country back on track, according to the latest PBS NPR Marxist poll, an attitude that experts put experts say puts the nation, quote, in an incredible dangerous place in the months before the 2024 presidential election.
Didn't one of the like head people for PBS, because this is a PBS poll, like didn't one of the people for like PBS just get busted for something recently?
I don't know.
Like I seem to remember there was like a thing where like some like the head of PBS or something got busted, like basically like being completely in bed with some leftist politician and violating like a whole bunch of laws that regard PBS. And like, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I could swear that just happened.
Isn't PBS government funded?
Yeah, but there's specific laws that are supposed to keep it impartial.
Yeah.
Like the and yeah, but and like and again, yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is another example of where no, the state is going way out of its way to propagandize and legislate by dictate because they're a dictatorship. Okay, this is the definition of tyranny.
One step there. There you go.
And so when you consider that, the fact that 20% of Americans, you got to bump those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers. 20% of Americans are now basically saying it's too far gone. The only way that this changes now is violence. That's not really surprising when you consider like, you're taking away any kind of judicial or legal means for people to assert their rights. What do you expect is going to happen?
Yes. Well, not only that, but like when you take in just talking about the last 4 years, think about everything that has happened just in the last 4 years, right? You got the summer of Floyd. Right, you got all the COVID regulations. You got inflation out of the wazoo. Right, four years ago you couldn't find toilet paper. Now you can't afford toilet paper.
Yep.
Right. You got just the food prices are going bonkers. It's insane the amount of change that is real that has honestly and openly happened just in the last 4 years. Right?
Mm-hmm.
People are resistant to change in short periods. Right? If the last 4 years was spread over 10 years, it would be an entirely different conversation. But because the last 4 years happened in such a short period of time, people are flipping the fuck out. And they should. They should, right? It's the whole boiling frog thing. But yes, one in five is rookie numbers. We need to team up with the 9/11 people. Oh man.
Well, and you know, and because this is a PBS thing, it goes on to like, you know, oh, well, Republicans are far more likely than Democrats. Yeah. And then it tries to blame Trump and start interviewing a bunch of politicians who are like, we need stronger voices that say that violence is not the answer. And I'm like, yeah, except that whenever Antifa does it, you seem to be fine with it. It's yeah, violence may not be the best option, but it is an option. Remember that, you know, there's that quote, you know, that those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. And we've seen that again and again in history, where when people can't redress their grievances and find no way to make their voice heard, no way to try and course correct a country that they want to course correct, they're left, you know, they're, you know, left with no alternative but to either lay down and accept the change, which the majority likely will, or to hold to their principles and engage in alternative measures to peaceful ones.
Yeah.
this is simply what happens in history. And if you continue, you know, you look at what's continuing, what keeps happening, and consider that they just continue to make peaceful revolution ever more impossible, you know the rest of the quote.
Yeah, Buckshot says, you hit it here first, kids. Radicalize your neighborhood. Absolutely. Go to your local mosque and join the active club.
No. First of all, I would never recommend anybody going to a mosque. But second of all, the revolution starts at home, right? Like, it starts in your own backyard. It starts in your own neighborhood. Like, get to know your neighbors, talk to your neighbors, talk to your neighbors regularly, hang out with them. And one of the things that I can say from experience, right, is because I have bonfires in my backyard and stuff, and my neighbors come over, or they have fires and we go over there. We all hang out, we talk, everything else. Most of them agree with me.
Yes.
And keep in mind, when I say most of my neighbors, I'm including the rainbow flag flying lesbians who live over on like the other side of the alley, and like they also agree with me. There's, I think what you'll find if you start talking to people and you start talking to people in your neighborhoods, and no matter how diverse your neighborhood is, that an awful lot of people who you might not have thought were definitely seeing what was happening and the loss of freedom do, and have a serious problem with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Radicalize your neighborhood.
Yeah,
build that community.
Talk to your neighbors and focus more on what you can agree on. Absolutely. We live in a society right now that thrives on the negativity, right? Talk mm-hmm. to your neighbors, focus on what you agree on, and just set aside or ignore that 3 or 5% that you don't agree on. Right. It's some of the circles I run in. People are so opposed to unifying and coming together to push a message or an ideology because of one or two little things. That's it. One or two little things. Out of everything else that they agree on, the one or two little things is what keeps certain communities from coming together. And it's absolutely asinine.
Look at the average anarchist community, and I use that term very loosely, online, and how often there's just endless drama. Everybody's accusing everybody else of being a Fed. Everybody's accusing everybody else of being, you know, horrible for one reason or another, whether it's true or not. Who cares? At this point, like, the reality is that everybody's willingly dividing themselves, that the divide and conquer strategy of your enemies has worked.
Yes.
And you are more concerned with your differences with people than you are with your similarities. And that's identity politics, right? Like, that's what they want to push, is they want to push everybody away from each other, make everybody scared or hating each other or worried about how different they are from everybody else. You remember when we were kids, when like Sesame Street would talk about how like, oh, well, you know, let's all get together with the, you know, with the Hispanic family in the neighborhood and like celebrate Cinco de Mayo or celebrate like, you know, the actual Mexican Independence Day or whatever. You know, we'll go to a pig roast with our Cuban neighbors, things like that. Right. And that was neat. And like trying to learn Spanish was cool, and trying to celebrate other cultures was cool because it was uniting us. Right. It was about, you know, we're stronger together. And now it's, oh, cultural appropriation all over the place. And it's about dividing you, and it's about just seeing nothing but your differences and not seeing the shit that you agree on.
If you don't agree with what I say, I'm going to set myself on fire. Okay.
Even when the Tibetan monks did that, when China seized Tibet, like, even then, it's like, what was that going to achieve?
Congratulations, you killed yourself so your enemies don't have to?
Yeah, and now we have two that have now set themselves on fire in protest of Israel and Gaza. And, like, regardless of how you feel about Israel and Gaza, self-immolation is probably not going to get you what you want in the situation.
It's the same with the people that block the freeways. Or here in the Bay Area, they block the Bay Bridge, which is a major, major thoroughfare between the peninsula and the East Bay. Blocking the freeways and pissing off blue-collar workers doesn't affect Israel and Gaza. Like, there was a girl at the Bakersfield City Council meeting threatened to behead all 18 members of the Bakersfield City Council because they wouldn't pass a resolution condemning Israel. She's now facing 18 murder charges or threats of violence, except something. She cried at her arraignment. Like, what is Bakersfield, California going to do to the Israel-Gaza conflict?
Absolutely nothing.
I mean, yes, book shot.
Now, the furries are the one group that you don't have to set aside your differences with. Okay, don't set aside your differences with furries.
Did you see that thing in Utah where the students walked out to furries that were there at the high school? That were biting and scratching people?
Yeah, I fully support that. No, absolutely not. Do not support the furries.
Utah has hunting seasons, I'm just saying.
Also remember that the BPD cat girls are not furries. They are BPD cat girls.
Don't even start.
And it's very important to learn all of their Squishmallows names. And what you will get in exchange is a fabulous treasure that you may eventually need to run away from with great speed, because there's like a knife.
And they are highly attracted to white supremacists that team up with Islamic extremists.
Somehow I suspect they're not.
Don't do that. Don't do it, Buckshot.
Do not Google that term.
You will go down a rabbit hole that is unfortunately an actual rabbit hole. it's not nice.
I mean, you will find yourself on Instagram for the next 8.5 hours. Okay, that is what's going to happen.
Yes,
and
aroused, but you have no idea why, and you are disturbed by that.
Yeah, and you will be scared. You will be scared of yourself in the wake of that. So furries aside, like, no, just. If you can find common ground with people, and the big thing is too, is like people who otherwise like disagree with you on almost everything. If you can find that little bit of common ground and you can start talking to them from there, you can begin to build
like white supremacists and Islamic extremists.
I mean, eventually, I doubt that though, because again, they really fundamentally oppose each other at a very core level.
Are you saying the FBI would lie?
What? They've never done that at like Ruby Ridge or Waco, Texas, or
Oklahoma City bombing, or
yeah, or Oklahoma City, or the, I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. But yeah, like, oh God. But if you can start building that foundation, right, of like, well, we at least agree on this, and then work your way, that's how you convince people to change their minds. The problem is that they don't want you to work on common ground and trying to convince people to change their minds from building from a foundation of what you agree on. They want you to just immediately start yelling and screaming at the people who disagree with you. They want you to hate them and immediately become violent and immediately become angry. And you don't do that. Don't fall into that trap. Talk to them, have conversations with people who disagree with you and try to convince them, hey, we do agree on some things. Let's build from there. Yeah. And if you can do that, that is how you start changing the world.
Yes. So, on that note, throw out some links and let's get out of here.
Check out thebeardstruggle.com. Use coding DanarchistX15. Get 15% off of your order from there. Also, Reaper brand apparel. There's a link in our link tree that gets you a bigger percentage off. Otherwise, you can use the coding DanarchistX and you can get a discount, but it's less. Use the link in the link tree to get that discount. We're also sponsored by Lions Not Sheep. They have super great stuff. Definitely check them out. The guy who founded it, he's also got a really cool book, Radical Change Requires Radical Change. Super cool book. And definitely check them out. Check out DavePoppinsPatches.com. Speaking of the patches.
Dave is dropping Helldiver patches right now.
Yes, yes, he is. They're super awesome. I really wish I could play Helldivers, but I don't actually have a PlayStation, so I can't. But why you'd make it a PlayStation exclusive is beyond me, but whatever. Yeah, so check out David Poppins patches. Speaking of which, if you sent me a message and you requested a patch, I am working on getting those out to you. I promise. I just have been super, super busy and it's been raining ridiculously and I haven't had time, but I am going to get those out to you guys. I did get all of your messages. If you did request one and you haven't sent us your address yet, I think there's like maybe one like that that didn't send an address yet. I need your address to send you stuff, man. Like, I can't, I don't know how to get that to you otherwise. So I need addresses, but I will send stuff out as soon as I possibly can. I think I have one patch left for giveaway. I think I have one. So
great. We're going to get 7 messages in the Telegram chat now.
Well, that's cool. Cause then at that point I'll use a random number generator to pick one.
Yeah. And they actually did it this time. Like, oh my God, you guys actually like followed through this time.
Yeah, holy cow, I actually was able to give patches away, so that was cool.
Like, oh my goodness. Like, they actually went into the Telegram chat and messaged us, or they messaged Andrew directly, or they messaged the Facebook page.
Yeah, that was crazy. Like, we actually got messages for them.
Just...
Yeah. Give yourselves a little round of applause for being able to pull off a very simple thing.
Man.
Hooray. But yeah,
it's like trying to herd BPD cats, man.
Yeah, BPD cat girls. That's you don't want to try and herd. You don't definitely like it, one's bad. Getting multiple of them together, that's an even worse idea. Like, no, don't do that.
White supremacist and Islamic extremist team,
you know? Certainly is likely to cause your imminent destruction. Yes.
Yes.
do not. Yeah, Buckshot is correct. Congratulations. You're slightly less retarded. Yay.
Oh.
You're approaching functional even, I dare say. Yeah.
Our listeners are totally not going to fall for the AI beauty pageant thing. Our listeners are so smart now that they can message a page and say, hey, I would like that patch, and leave addresses. We're smart enough now. Our listeners are smart enough now that they are not going to fall for the AI beauty pageant. No, we're good.
You know who is going to be the Indian men that are all over the internet telling girls how beautiful they are and hitting on classical paintings.
Yes.
They're definitely going to fall for it.
Yeah, those guys will not be teaming up with the white supremacists and the extremists. That's what we need. We need the white supremacists to not team up with the radical Islamist and just team up with the moderate Islamist rebellion extremists.
Well, that's what the US government does, right? It just arms the moderates. So
we need moderates. We need white separatists and moderate moderate Islamic.
A very different thing.
And then it'll be a totally moderate teaming up, and then the U.S. government will arm them.
Yeah, and give them Hiluxes.
Yeah, and they can come and protect our town in Montana.
Yeah, because that's definitely how that works. That's definitely how arming extremists has always worked. Moderates. How arming the moderate rebels has always worked.
Let me
out so well.
Just it's so. Oh, man. I feel as dumb as an FBI agent right now.
It's, I mean, FBI agents couldn't have figured out how to do that messaging. That's how I know that these guys are not feds, because feds are too dumb to have figured out how to do that.
Scott is asking to see your vagine.
Yeah, Bob's in vagine. Two milk, bitch lasagna.
Bitch lasagna. Yes. Yes.
Yep.
All right. You got anything else? I am.
Man, I'm sure I missed.
I'm so lost right now.
Yeah. If anyone's still dumb enough to be listening, also check out RK Spookware. Check out Coffee Brand Coffee from The Quartering. There's probably somebody else I'm forgetting that sponsors us. If you're interested in sponsoring us and giving me free stuff so that I hork your shit on this incredibly, definitely not autistic podcast, by all means, hit me up and I will be happy to hork your shit.
Is RK back up? The website, it's hit and miss. Sometimes it's up, sometimes it's not. I know he's been doing some lives on YouTube, teaming up with the homie Magnus, and they've been painting Warhammer figurines. And then Twitter, RK Spookware, is up on Twitter. You just got to find him.
Yeah, he is a ghost. You know, yeah. Their symbol is a ghost. It is Spookware. So
yes. he's apparently sponsoring a shooter now. Competition shooter?
Really?
Yes, there was a guy wearing a RK Spookware jersey that won a medal at a recent competition.
That's cool.
That's sweet. Freaking fantastic.
Yeah, that's really neat. So look at that. See, we're even connected to like popular things.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Occasionally. Occasionally.
Like the white supremacist Islamic radical.
Well, thankfully, no, we're not tied to those people. Don't give FBI something to like cling on to here. And we are not tied to those people.
Civil War II.
Yeah. Oh god, that looks so bad.
Yeah.
But California and Texas teamed up. You know, that's the same mind that says that radical white supremacists and Islamic extremists are going to team up is the one that thinks that California and Texas.
That's literally Texas on the first part of that and California on the second part of that.
Yeah. Like that is the mind right there that creates that just absolute travesty of a film.
Yes. Yes.
Good Lord. And it's from the clips I've seen. It's not even like good. Like the writing is really, really bad.
Yeah. What kind of an American are you?
Yeah. Well, what kind of an American are you? What? Nobody says that.
Yeah. So on that note, give us a piece of life advice.
If there are federal agents outside your door, don't open the door.
And record them.
And record them.
Record every interaction with law enforcement.
Always. Always. Always, always. And record it live stream so that it uploads somewhere that is not on your device.
Yes. On that note, we'll catch you on the next one. Peace.
Peace.